Hello, dear friends. Welcome back to History's Great Mysteries. I'm your host, Nick, and I thank you for joining me today on this podcast. And without any further ado, let's get straight into this episode, and I will begin with a question. What makes something cursed? To say that something is truly, truly cursed, in my mind, means that insidious evil and dark events have surrounded something for generations, bringing terror and misfortune to anyone along its path. And there can be many diverse ways in which a curse can strike out. Diversity can be a curse's scariest quality because you don't know how the curse will strike next.
What in the hell's diversity?
Well, I could be wrong, but I believe diversity is an old, old wooden ship that was used during the Civil War era. That's right.
And while Ron Burgundy is incredibly incorrect with the meaning of diversity, it does provide me the perfect segue into our diverse and cursed topic of today's episode. Today I bring you the tragic, mystifying, and downright evil history behind an unfortunately real old, old wooden ship from the Civil War era, the Mary Celeste. The story of the fateful Mary Celeste begins in 1861, right at the beginning of the Civil War, the American Civil War, when our wooden ship was constructed at Spencer's Island in Nova Scotia, Canada. Now, this specific wooden ship was a 282-ton brigantine beauty of a spectacle, originally named the Amazon, and probably exactly what you would imagine when I talk about a large, classic wooden sailing ship. However, its construction is probably the only thing about it that went off without a hitch. The captain of the maiden voyage, which took place soon after its construction in May of that same year, was named Robert McClellan. And Robert McClellan would soon become the first victim of this so-called curse of the Mary Celeste. At this point, it was called the Amazon, because quickly into this maiden voyage, he became ill, developing a fever, and the crew reported that he would continually fall into coughing fits. Eventually, he got his coughing fits became more violent, blood, and eventually he just succumbed to his illness and died on the voyage on the ship. And obviously, this is not a good start to the history of this ship, and many like to point to it as, you know, this is the catalyst that would become the first thing that marks the cursed nature of this ship. And some say that Robert McClellan's soul never left the ship. He continues to curse it. And during the first, because the maiden voyage, you know, went on, even with the death of the captain, and during the first leg of that maiden voyage, the Amazon actually crashed into a fishing dam. And then on the return leg back to Nova Scotia, it ended up crashing into another ship, a separate ship, and then sank that ship in the Strait of Dover. So it's just leaving carnage in its path. Then in 1867, the ship hit land near Cow Bay at Cape Breton Island, Nova Scotia, and it critically damaged the hull, leaving a scar across not only the infrastructure of the ship, but across its legacy. With mounting costs and maintenance needed to keep the Amazon seaworthy at this point, and then obviously with its needless to say rough history, the original owner made a daring move to get rid of this ship because it wasn't worth keeping around, and the reputation that it was garnering was not good, to say the least. So he, perhaps maybe to end the ill-fated destiny of this ship, it probably would have been better if this was the end of the ship, but obviously this is not the end of the episode. So even when our first owner here crashed it into land on purpose, debatably, he left it there to rot. And it was a few years later that an American named Richard W. Haynes came along and decided that he was going to salvage the ship. So he fixed her up, polished her new, and then renamed it to, you guessed it, the Mary Celeste. And you may be wondering where this name came from, and it was actually inspired by the real-life Maria Celeste, who was the illegitimate daughter of Galileo. So anyways, while Richard Haynes was initially really excited for, you know, grabbing up the ship, he quickly discovered that he was not about to get a return on his investment. the maintenance that it took to keep the Mary Celeste ready for travel was not worth the time and the effort. And then eventually Haynes decided that he wanted to sell, but he couldn't find, because like I said, this ship had already garnered quite a reputation, and a very bad reputation at that. Eventually, though, he did find a poor old chap named Captain Benjamin Sooner Briggs, and this man ended up buying the Mary Celeste off of him. And this would set in motion the most notorious, single, and the most deadly event to surround the Mary Celeste. On November 7th, 1872, the Mary Celeste began a fateful journey, beginning in New York City, and it was setting off towards Genoa, Italy, so it would be a large transatlantic journey across the Atlantic Ocean. And it was carrying more than 1,700 barrels of alcohol in the hold, in the bowels of the ship, and this is what was going to be transported to Genoa. This type of sailing during this time was very routine, actually, and everyone on board the Mary Celeste, including Captain Briggs, thought that this would be a very easy delivery across the Atlantic. On board, there was a crew of 8 and then 2 additional passengers who happened to be Captain Briggs' wife and their 2-year-old daughter, Sophia, and that just goes to show how confident he was in this voyage. So they began their journey harmless enough, but upon leaving land and waving goodbye to their loved ones, no one could have known that this would be the last time anyone ever saw that crew. On December 4th, 1872, a separate British vessel called the De Gratia spotted an ominously floating ship off the coast of the Azores Islands, which are a small group of islands almost 1,000 miles off the coast of Portugal. And the captain of De Gratia spotted the Mary Celeste in the distance and decided to investigate further when he decided that it was sailing aimlessly and haphazardly, to say the least. They sailed closer and closer, and as they did get closer, no answers were being revealed. They didn't know what was going on. Eventually, they got close enough so that the first mate was able to swing aboard the Mary Celeste and investigate. The crew watched him as he descended below the deck, only to return minutes later, informing them all that no one was aboard. Everyone was missing. After further inspection of the scene, some interesting facts became known. Firstly, almost all of the possessions of the crew were left on board and intact. Every worldly and personal possession that they had that, you know, might lead to some clues if some were missing, all there. Secondly, the cargo hold had its coverings ripped off for some reason, and that will be talked about in more detail a bit later. Right now, they're just kind of looking and seeing what they can see. And then also, there was a longboat missing, and the longboat can sometimes be used for, you know, escape missions off of the ship if you're going to abandon ship or something like that. But at this point, no one had any guesses in this direction. And then finally, there was one large rope that was tied to the stern of the ship and then floating off into the sea behind it. And then other than those three things, and then there were a couple things missing on the boat, like there was a sextant missing, I believe, but for the most part, everything was intact and nothing about the ship was really out of place. The cargo with all the alcohol in it was still intact, and there were maybe a couple of barrels that seemed cracked, but no signs of foul play by any means. There was no blood, no bones, nothing to indicate that something insidious had happened. It really did seem like the crew had just vanished into thin air. And it is worth mentioning at this point as well that there was some water at the very bottom of the ship, and it wasn't enough water by any means to sink it, to even think about sinking it. And I'm not like a pro sailor or know much about sailing during this time in history, but apparently that's not all that concerning to have a little bit of water in the bottom. And apparently during this time they were using these like water pumps to be able to manage how much water was at the bottom of the ship. And maybe one of the pumps was not working at this time. There's a lot of conflicting reports on that, but there was some water at the bottom. But the captain of De Gratia who boarded the Mary Celeste actually just continued to sail the Mary Celeste. He put some crew members from his own boat onto the Mary Celeste, and then they sailed together over to Gibraltar with, you know, really nothing else to do. And it landed successfully without incident on the 12th of December. So the crew of the De Gratia gets into Gibraltar, and they show law enforcement there and everybody who needs to know, and they explain exactly what happened. You know, they found the ship floating aimlessly. They went aboard, didn't see anybody. They explained everything. And the situation that they got into was the fact that this boat, if it was determined that there was no wrongdoing, the boat and the things within it, the cargo, would become theirs, the crew of the De Gracia. And so constables and then law enforcement all went onto the boat. They did their own investigation, saw pretty much exactly what the crew had been explaining to them. Nothing seemed out of place, no signs of foul play. And so lo and behold, all of the cargo, all of the alcohol got was given to the crew of the De Gracia. And this was actually more than $35,000 worth of valuables. And at this time, you know, that's a small fortune. So, but it didn't dispel any of the rumors that would come out of this. So quickly enough, word started spreading about this incredible thing that had happened out at sea. And all throughout Europe at this point, rumors are spreading about what possibly could have happened to the crew. No one has any idea. They didn't show up anywhere. No one has any clues beyond exactly what I've told you guys here. And so everyone was just taking it in a million different directions. But at the end of it all, whatever the rumor was, essentially it all boiled down to the Mary Celeste was cursed, and this reputation for being cursed would never leave it from this point. It kind of already had it, but now it definitely had it. And actually, I'm going to take a slight detour here to explain how perhaps our poor friend Captain Briggs and his wife and his daughter would, you know, they most likely lost their life, how that was only the beginning of the Briggs family curse that very well could have been an extension of the curse from the Mary Celeste. So Captain Benjamin Spooner Briggs, who most likely met his unfortunate fate on the Mary Celeste in this event that I had just described, actually, before he went on this journey, before he bought the Mary Celeste and began this voyage, he was actually really considering being a hardware clerk in Massachusetts. He was about to switch professions. And unfortunately for him, he did not. And he ended up going on this journey, again, with his wife and with his 2-year-old daughter, Sophia. And they both also most likely met their demise on the Mary Celeste. But it didn't end there. They also had a son named Arthur who was still in school during the time of this voyage. So he stayed on the mainland when they went off on the Mary Celeste. But later in life, Arthur would actually also die tragically after he was killed by a falling tree in a storm. And then it goes even further than that. Briggs's brother, Oliver, who was also kind of working in the profession of sailing, also had a ship go down in a sudden storm on January 8th, 1873, and his ship was the Julia A. Halleck, and he sank to the bottom of the ocean with that ship, so he died as well. And then even then, his father was killed by lightning, a lightning strike, and if you can't tell me that that's some kind of intervention there, then I don't know what would make you believe it, but honestly, From hearing this about the Briggs family and all of their untimely demises, I can't help but feel that something was set in motion, and that very well could have been set in motion by the Mary Celeste. But anyways, back to the main timeline of events here. So the Mary Celeste, the cursed ship, the years following it, after the Captain Briggs incident at least, it just spelled doom for its profitability. And like I said, it was cursed and everyone knew it. It sailed for a while to whoever would buy it in the Indian Ocean, but for sure no one could make any money off of it. It kept getting damaged, and also three owners during the time that it was sailing in the Indian Ocean died prematurely. Some of these deaths maybe a little bit more coincidental than others. And this allowed for the ultimate final owner, a Gilman C. Parker, to snatch it up for a very cheap price, but he had a plan for it, and it wasn't nice to the ship. Not that this ship, I guess, deserves niceness, but what he did and what he planned was an insurance fraud scam. So he was going to take this big old brigantine, which in and of itself could be said to be, you know, it's worth a lot of money. A normal brigantine would be worth a lot of money. But then he also packed it with gallons and gallons and barrels of what he claimed to be fine wine and other valuable items. But in reality, the barrels were only filled with seawater, and it was all an elaborate attempt to, you know, bulk up the the amount of money that's sailing on this ship, and then he intentionally rammed it into a rock off the coast of Haiti and let it sink to the bottom of the Caribbean. However, the Mary Celeste was not done yet, and from the depths, it could be said that it reached its accursed grasp up to spite the crew who had just destroyed it. The insurance scam did not work. He was found guilty of fraud, but it even got worse from there. All told, there were 5 people ultimately involved with this insurance fraud scam. First, obviously, we had the Captain Parker, who, before he could be charged and imprisoned for this fraud, he was actually, well, he actually died in a drunken stupor in which he choked to death on his own vomit, as I understand it here. And then also his first mate, who was involved as well, actually died before he could be charged in a knife fight. And then of the 3 other crew members that were also going to be charged, 2 of them died, one of which died by suicide, and then another was declared insane, all before the charges could be brought against them, which, you know, like I said, brought many to believe that the Mary Celeste had reached from the bottom of the ocean and took its revenge on these people before anyone else could get revenge on them. So it's just very interesting to hear all of these stories, and at a certain extent, I honestly believe that coincidence only goes so far, and you know, you could call it karma, you can call it a series of events that are just coincidences, you can call them bad omens, but whatever it is, you know what, if you, when you hear the word cursed, this is exactly what you would envision. This is exactly how it plays out. It was over long periods of time, in many, many different ways, that the Mary Celeste reached out and claimed victims in different ways. And this will ultimately lead me to the theories. And the theories, while a lot of times they boil down to, okay, like, it all boils down to the curse, like I said. But mainly we're going to focus on that main captain, the disappearance of the Captain Briggs crew. You know, what the hell happened to them? How could, what, if anything, could possibly explain the disappearance of the 10 crew members with little to no clues? And it's interesting because if it wasn't for a man by the name of Arthur Conan Doyle, who, if you know him, he's the man who actually wrote the Sherlock Holmes series, the original penman of the Sherlock Holmes series. He also wrote a short story about the Mary Celeste. It was a fictional short story, but it kind of reignited interest in this case for many people. So it could be said that if he never wrote this story, maybe we would all forget about the Mary Celeste and maybe no one would know about it. But for better or for worse, it reignited the fight, the debate about the theories and who's right and who's wrong about what actually happened to the crew on the Mary Celeste. And while his account of the event is mostly fictional, like I said, what he describes is a theory in and of itself, and it has kept the debate alive even to today, and which is why I've brought it up on this podcast. And a lot of these theories are very interesting. A lot of them also very plausible, I would say. I feel like in most episodes in the past, we have a mixture of very implausible theories mixed with some that are like, okay, that's probably right. But this one's honestly, there's a lot of theories here that you can't really discount a lot of them. And it's kind of up to you guys to decide what you think actually happened here. So without further ado, I will jump right into them. So fittingly, the first theory that I'll jump into here is the subject of Arthur Conan Doyle's book, or his short story, rather. The short story is titled J. Habcook Jeffson's Statement. And it's actually a really good short story. It's very interesting, but it is fictional in nature, like I said. But when it was published during that time, a lot of people took it for fact, because it was published shortly after the event actually took place. And while it was in fact, the subject of how it happened, essentially, is very possible. And the subject of it was essentially mutiny. And, you know, you can take any kind of reason why this mutiny occurred. For some reason or another, the crew was not happy with Captain Briggs and his leadership, or any other reason, but they had a mutiny and something went wrong. And it ended up that for some reason they had to leave the ship. I don't know, you know, this whole mutiny theory only goes so far, only explains so much. You kind of have to combine it with another theory as to why they left everything on board. Why is there no sign of foul play if someone was being killed on board? And you know, what happened to the people that were part of the mutiny? And in the book, they sail to a different area, but obviously that didn't happen because they found the ship. So maybe some people like to say, okay, there was not a mutiny, there was one stowaway, there was one rogue who was hiding on the ship, who wanted safe passage, or who was escaping from something, and during the voyage, he revealed himself to the crew and killed everybody, maybe threw him overboard, cleaned up his mess, and then took himself to the depths as well. Maybe he took that longboat and sailed off into the sunset, you know? Who knows what became of that one rogue if you were to subscribe to that one theory. But then again, he would have had to find a very clean, efficient, and leaving behind no traces sort of way to end these people's lives if there was going to be all this investigation afterwards that led to the decision of no foul play. So that one, it works. It's interesting. There's a lot of different avenues that you can take that theory. But it still just doesn't explain the reason as to, you know, why was there no sign of a crime there then? Why does it look like they just poofed out of thin air? And that's really where the true mystery of this mystery that I'm explaining is the fact that it just looked so normal when the ship was investigated. It looked like they just vanished. And so we'll go on to our second theory here, which is definitely more extravagant. And I'm just going to combine like three of them together, three of the most extravagant ones together, because they're all kind of, they only need like a couple sentences to explain. The first one is that it was just a very supernatural thing. They time traveled, they poofed, spontaneous combustion, just something crazy happened to all of them. They went into a time warp, who knows. There's also people that say a giant squid attacked them. Came from the depths of the ocean, reached up its tentacles and took off each of the crew members one by one. And while I say that one with a little bit of, you know, vagueness there, it actually was kind of, that theory was a little bit more popular during the time of this actual event in the late 1800s there. A lot of people actually did want to believe the squid theory, but obviously in modern times it has a lot less credence. And then lastly, in this category, also people talk about aliens. They were abducted by aliens. They came aboard the ship and took them into their saucers. Any way you want to take that idea, there's pretty much no way to disprove it. But there's also no way to prove it. One of my favorite quotes is by a guy named Carl Sagan, who said that extraordinary claims require extraordinary proof. And in this regard, these are extraordinary claims with very little proof. But you may find that there really is no other logical explanation, perhaps, and might turn back to these ones, who knows. But we'll move on to further theories. The next theory is that of piracy, or pirates. They boarded the ship and killed everyone, maybe took them onto their own ship. But again, this one kind of runs into the same problems of the mutiny and rogue theory in the fact that there were no signs of foul play. You know, perhaps you have these pirates that are absolute experts at cleaning up their mess and left behind no trace. But another problem with this theory is also, what was the purpose of it then? If nothing was taken, you know, other than the longboat, not even the boat itself was taken, the alcohol wasn't taken, you know, why did pirates come on and kill everybody? Maybe they jumped on expecting there to be more, expecting there to be something to steal. There was just these barrels of unusable alcohol, and it's unusable because it was denatured alcohol. It wasn't the final form alcohol that you can actually drink. If anyone was to actually try to drink the alcohol that was in this barrel, it would actually make them go blind. So maybe that could explain why there were a few cracked barrels. Maybe the pirates came on, tried to see if they could at least drink this alcohol, figured out that they couldn't, and maybe killed everybody out of spite. Took them onto their ship, dumped their bodies overboard, who knows, and then cleaned everything up after the fact. Obviously, no one's ever come forward saying that they were responsible for the deaths of these people. Not that anybody really would, not that a pirate crew would take the time out of their day to do that, and also not that a pirate crew was the most common thing during this time as well. So there are a few holes in this theory, but it kind of gets me more onto the topic of what is going on with the equipment, what's going on with the cargo, with all the alcohol. I feel like a lot of the clues can be found in when you consider those things. And then also the longboat. Why was it gone? And so that will lead me into the next theory that was popularized by an individual named Anne McGregor, who actually had a team put together to make a movie about solving the curse of the Mary Celeste, or this event, the Mary Celeste. And what her team got to the bottom of and what they believe happened all centers around faulty equipment, being off course, and bad decision making towards the end. So essentially, what it was is that firstly, the water pumps at the bottom of the ship that were designed to pump out the water weren't working, and it freaked the people out. It freaked the captain out. And that could have brought on a series of panicked decisions that also may have led to why they were off course. There is information to believe, based on captain's log and everything else that was going on and where the ship was found, that they were actually hundreds of miles off course during their final days. This can't be definitively proven, but it is highly likely that they were at least a little off course. And so that could have also brought on a state of panic. Also, just to jump back a step, that could have also brought on a mutiny as well, if you want to believe that this all led to maybe a mutiny in the end. But a lot of people want to say, okay, so it got to this point where things were not going right for the crew. Things were looking dreadful, in fact, and they believed that they were about to drown they believed that the ship was about to sink because of all this water filling in, and they had this faulty pump. They believed at any moment that the ship was going to fill with water and they would be doomed. And so this is where the first kind of jump to the, okay, this is why they used the longboat. What they did is they called, the captain called an abandoned ship, and they all jumped into this longboat. And that's also why the rope is tied to the stern and hanging off the back. So people at this point believe that once they all got into the longboat, they tied the longboat to the stern with this rope and then just kind of floated behind the Mary Celeste. And, it's safe. It's half safe, at that point. They're in the longboat. They're not going to drown. But then they're also close enough to the Mary Celeste to maybe go back if they want to, if they decide that it's okay now. Obviously this decision-making doesn't make 100% sense. It's not 100% clear as to why they would make these decisions. But one thing is kind of does make sense is the fact that when they found this rope dangling from the back, just drifting in the water, they assumed that, okay, maybe that's what the longboat was tied to. And maybe for whatever reason, the longboat disconnected from the rope and just floated off into the ocean. And you can imagine all 10 of the crew members, the two passengers sitting there watching their poor little longboat just float away from their safety from the Mary Celeste, watching it go off into the distance, and then they're just doomed to aimlessly drift off into their deaths. And this theory, it ends terribly. But the next theory that I'll get into that kind of ties onto this theory as well was actually a very interesting one that I read recently that has only come out with some modern experimentation on this event. This theory has been in and out of public eye for quite a while, and it was originally kind of thrown out there when it was realized that of the barrels of alcohol in the Mary Celeste, it is known that 9 of the barrels of alcohol were not damaged yet completely empty from the inside. There was nothing inside of them, yet no damage to indicate that they were like leaking through a crack or anything like that. And so the question is, why were they empty? And it's not a coincidence that these 9 of all of the barrels of alcohol were red oak barrels, where all the other barrels were white oak. And white oak barrels apparently are a good for holding alcohol, good for holding liquids, whereas the red oak barrels are not and can lead to leaking. And it is thought that for one reason or another, during the loading of the Mary Celeste in New York, someone accidentally used these red oak barrels instead of the white ones on 9 occasions, on 9 different barrels. And so what this leads to is the fact that, okay, maybe there was some alcohol leaking into the ship. And again, this isn't drinkable alcohol. It's just creating these ethanol fumes in the air as it's leaking out into the ship. But when this theory was originally put forward very soon after the event actually occurred, a lot of people said, no, that's not possible, because when the De Gratia crew jumped onto the Mary Celeste, and then when the official investigation looked at it, there was no sign of alcohol, no smell of it. Everything seemed to be enclosed. There was no indication that this had happened. And maybe there was an explosion of these fumes, but then there was no burns, there was no scorch marks. And so this idea of this was pretty quickly thrown out. But very recently, actually in 2006, Dr. Andrea Sella, a professor of chemistry at the University College London, actually conducted an experiment where he kind of recreated the hold for the Mary Celeste with all of these alcohol barrels. And what he did is he put fumes into the air, alcohol fumes into the air, and tried to recreate the environment of what would have been happening at that time as close as he could. And what he found is that when the fumes were ignited, when there was an explosion of these alcohol fumes, it didn't actually burn anything within his recreation. He put paper and cardboard and all these things within the recreation to see how it burned, and none of it burned. Which, if this is actually how it occurred on the Mary Celeste, then that would explain why when it was investigated, nothing was burned and it didn't look like there was ever a fire or an explosion of any kind. And it's really interesting, the science behind it. Essentially, when you're looking at the cool air that was within the hull of the Mary Celeste, that's the key as to why nothing burned. It was essentially like, Dr. Andrea Sella explains, it's like a flash explosion that is so quick and with such cool air being part of the explosion that it doesn't actually result in burning of the surrounding environment. And it's just really fast, really explosive, really scary. It creates a huge noise. It's terrifying, but it didn't actually damage a ton of things. And so what the thought is with this theory, with this alcohol explosion theory, is that the hole filled up with these alcohol fumes. And on some occasion, there was some sort of light ignition of the fumes, and it resulted in this huge explosion that scared the crap out of everybody on board, right? And so with this explosion, it tore off the cargo hold coverings, which were, like I said very early on in the podcast, they were found to be torn off. So that's what the theory says, is they blow off these holds. That explains that. Everyone was scared out of their minds about this explosion, but everyone was okay, weirdly enough, like I said, because it didn't actually result in damage. And they thought better to go onto the longboat instead of stick around on the Mary Celeste and wait for that to happen again. So everybody jumps onto the longboat, and then similar to the last theory, something happens on that longboat with the rope attached to it, and they ended up just drifting off into sea. And this is really interesting. I think this one has a lot of backing to it, and I don't think, however, that it completely is the correct story. And through all of my research, I have concocted my own humble opinion that kind of mostly is based off of this alcohol explosion theory, but with a few slight turns, and I'll explain it now. So here's my theory as to what happened to those 10 crew members on the Mary Celeste. Essentially, I do believe that there were those 9 red oak barrels that were unintentionally leaking alcohol out into the ship and creating these terrible alcohol fumes in the air. Now, alcohol fumes are a lot heavier than normal oxygenated air, and for that reason, these fumes just really stuck below the ship. And I believe what happened, more so than the explosion, because obviously I do think the explosion happened to scare the crap out of everybody, but I do believe also that unintentionally, I think a lot of the crew was breathing in these fumes. I think someone along the way realized what was going on, and they went below the deck and they had to try to figure it out. There were people down there working, trying to figure out what was going on. Again, they had a faulty water pump down there. Maybe they were also trying to figure that out. Who knows what was going on? Maybe they thought the alcohol was in the water at the bottom. Maybe they were trying to get it to work, but they were spending a lot of time down there. And I think, based on the research that I've done with alcohol inhalation, when you're inhaling alcohol fumes like that, it's bypassing the stomach and therefore bypassing the liver to eventually go into your bloodstream. And the liver, and then you eventually puking, this negative feedback is ultimately what blocks people from getting extreme alcohol poisoning, is that you'll throw up before you can get too far. But with inhalation, it goes straight into the bloodstream via the pulmonary pathways, and that is super, super dangerous. And if you consider this idea with the crew members working down there trying to figure this thing out, they're getting crazy drunk trying to do these things. They are making terrible decisions. They maybe broke some equipment, weren't doing anything right. And then on top of all of that, boom, a huge explosion goes off. No one dies. They're scared out of their mind. The captain calls to abandon the ship. They don't know what's going on. They need to get onto the longboat, maybe sober up and try to figure this out, try to talk it through and try to figure out what's going on. But lo and behold, while they're tying the ropes, while they're setting up this longboat idea, in their drunkenness, in their terrible decision making, maybe they can't quite tie the rope right. Maybe something goes wrong where they're out on the longboat and someone falls overboard and they try to rescue him. Things go awry. And lo and behold, through that, they all kind of drift off into the distance to meet their demise. And the Mary Celeste continues on to later be found a few days later by the De Gratia crew. And while this theory, again, is very bleak, I do believe that it fills in all of the holes in other theories and makes me pretty happy with all the things, the reason that people didn't grab personal items, they couldn't take it onto the longboat. Perhaps the explosion as well was the reason that the cargo hold coverings were blown off, but maybe also because they took them off by themselves because they wanted to air out the fumes. But again, that wouldn't work because the alcohol fumes are so much heavier than normal air. And through this recent research, we're kind of really discovering that this very well could have been the case, but it also could have been a combination of other things. You know, the off-course theory by Ann McGregor and the ultimately faulty equipment also could have played a part in descent and maybe panicked decision-making that all led to this perfect storm of a tragedy that ended up occurring. Now, while it may seem that the Captain Briggs event at the Mary Celeste may very well have ended with a rational explanation, there still remains the fact that anyone and everyone who came in contact with the Mary Celeste at one point in its lifetime was brought ultimate misfortune. And even then, some people only indirectly involved felt the wrath of the curse. And I don't throw the word curse around lightly. I've never really used it before on this podcast, but any way you look at this, it is textbook as you consider what a curse is. But if you don't buy it, you still cannot deny the tragedy and the terror that this ship, the Mary Celeste, has brought into this world in one form or another. Thank you all for listening. I hope you all enjoyed learning about this mystery today. I say this all the time, but I'll say it again. If you have any recommendations, ideas, super amazing theories, please comment on my Facebook page where you can find all of my sources and pictures to go along with each episode. I always love to hear any and all feedback from you guys. But as always, I will be back next Thursday for another great mystery of history. Signing off for today, and I'll see you next time.